Her car door didn't slam. I remembered she was letting me use the car for the day tomorrow. It could have been a minute later or an hour when the doorbell rang. Funny, I thought. She should have had a key. I put on some pants and was grabbing a t-shirt when a car door did slam. The car squealed away from the parking lot and then squealed again as it tore out onto Second. Not Kit. I opened the front door a crack and peered out, the car long gone. A brown cardboard box more than a yard long lay on the doormat. I picked it up, heavy, and turned it over. No address or postage. I took it inside and put it on the dining room table and turned on the overhead. Low light for romance. I clapped it up twice. The box was secured with a single piece of broad strapping tape. Too strong for my thumbnail, so I got a knife from the kitchen rack. Inside, packed in crumpled paper and inflated plastic bags, was a gleaming new M2010 AW9. Exactly the same rifle I'd used in the desert, though I'd never seen a new one. I reached to pull it out, but then stopped. What the hell was going on? Under the sink there was a box of throwaway plastic gloves some previous tenant had left. I stripped off a pair and put them on clumsily, feeling melodramatic. This thing was going straight to the police, and if there were fingerprints on it, they wouldn't be mine. It had a good smell, gunmetal and walnut wood. I liked the wood stock, even though it was heavier than the more modern one, and some guys said it had harder recoil without the spring. But it felt like a rifle. I took it out and set it on the table. There was also a box of 25 rounds of match-quality 300 Magnum ammunition, with a round battery taped to the top. That would be for the scope, night use. A threaded chrome cylinder, that must be a silencer. At least, that's what they looked like in movies. A plastic bag with a dozen paper targets. It had a shorter magazine than we had used in combat. I thumbed the release and found that it held 6 rounds and a folded-up note. Plain bond paper printed out in what appeared to be 20-point courier. I will pay you $100,000 to do what you once did for private's pay. Your target will be a bad man. You will agree that the world is a better place without him. Down payment in the buttstock. I will be in touch. Deficient in grammar, but intriguing. I got a small screwdriver and removed the butt plate. On top of the cleaning supplies, 10 of the new $1,000 bills, neatly folded into thirds. That was military. Bedding, uniforms, ponchos, all folded in thirds. The friendly sergeant we'd had in sniper school said by the time we got out of the army, we'd be folded in thirds. For a person with pretty bad spelling and grammar, he certainly had lots of money. I creased the bills so they would lie flat and brought the desk lamp and magnifier over to study them. 10 dead Kennedys. I'd never seen one before, except for pictures when they started circulating them a couple of years ago. They didn't show anywhere, but then not many people would crumple one up and stuff it in a pocket. Rumor had it that they were manufactured with nano-circuitry that broadcast the location of each bill. The government denied that with just the right degree of, who, us? If they were counterfeit, an amateur like me probably couldn't tell. I took the magnifying glass and examined Kennedy's right eye on each one, and they all looked the same. The paper had authentic-looking threads, but I'd seen how counterfeiters could bleach out a $1 bill and photoprint any denomination onto it. The email hoax. A few months after I got back, I got a bunch of emails that tried to hire me to kill the president. But that was a kid, Timmy something. He'd never confessed, but went to juvenile court and got a suspended sentence. Could they be related? I ought to find out what became of young Timmy. Maybe he came into money. I picked up the phone. Don't use 911 unless it's an emergency. I clicked on the directory. Call the Iowa City cops or the state troopers. Or Coralville or the campus cops, for that matter. Or go straight to the FBI or Homeland Security. Well, I didn't especially like any of those organizations. Which one would cause me the least trouble? I wished I still smoked. This would be the time to stoke up a pipe and emulate Sherlock Holmes. But I didn't even have any tobacco. Just a little marijuana and some rolling papers stashed away. That would be a real good idea. Would I be breaking a law by inaction? I assumed so, but what would the law be? Technically, I was in possession of an unregistered military weapon, but the selector switch only said safe and semi. If it didn't shoot full auto, I assumed it was legal. I could put the 10 grand in the bank while I decided what to do, but no. At 3.5%, it would earn less than $1 a day. And it probably wouldn't be in there a day before the cops came knocking. Was I accessory to a crime? A conspiracy to kill some unidentified bad guy? That might be a crime once the bad guy was identified, but right now you could argue that I just had a legal gun and a hypothetical use for it. Plus 10 dead Kennedys. It couldn't be real. Somebody was setting me up. But for what? A joke? A blackmail deal? It would be an expensive joke, not very funny, and if they blackmailed me, they could get a 3-figure check and a comic book collection, which I'd have to collect from Mother's attic. I went to the computer and found that a new rifle like this, with a standard high-power scope, would run $2,600 out of the box. I ought to just take it down to gun and porn, but they probably wouldn't take a weapon that didn't have papers. Or I could wait and see who they wanted dead. There were a couple of people I'd gladly kill for free. Maybe I'd be lucky. It occurred to me that that was a thing any guy might say casually. But it does mean something different if you once assassinated people for $1,300 a month and all the army chow you could eat. Presumably, most of the people I'd killed as a sniper were guys like me. Ordinary people snared by chance or circumstance and turned into killers by their own government. I told myself that I could feel sorry that they were dead, without feeling guilty for being an instrument in the chain of events that led to our unfortunate meeting. I was drafted, and most of them were forced into uniform by poverty and politics. This was completely different, except for the tool engaged. The target would probably not know he was a target, and presumably wouldn't be shooting back. And the person shooting him would not be a just-following-orders soldier. He'd be a hired assassin. I should take the whole thing, money and all, down to the police station and wash my hands of it. Any normal person would. Instead, I stared at it and thought, if I did have an immortal soul, it was already forfeit. So ponder the ponderable. First, could I do it and not get caught? With no wind deflection and a clear shot, working from a stable platform, I could put a bullet into the head zone, head or neck, from 2,000 meters, call it a mile and some change. One or two follow-up rounds into the thorax. A little less accurate with a silencer, I assumed. I'd never used one. My first thought was that if it was a city situation like Kennedy, King, or Semple, then no way. Of course, those assassins hadn't used silencers. Still, there would probably be witnesses and then a short chase. With a silencer, though? From a mile away? It could be done. but could it be done by me? I supposed it would depend on the target. If it was somebody I would kill for free, then sure, I'd do it for the money. If it was some random stranger, then not. Maybe not. The phone rang. Two. It wasn't Kit. She always called the cell. And not before dawn. I let it ring four times and picked it up. Well, I said. A woman's voice. If it was the right person, would you do it? I should have said, I don't know what you're talking about, and hung up. Instead, I said, I don't know enough. Who are you?
I can't tell you that.
I can tell you that we are not the government or enemies of the government. It's not a political assassination. Why should that be a plus? Being a gun for hire with no principles involved isn't appealing.
You didn't agree with the principles behind the war for which you killed 16 people.
Apples and oranges. I didn't have a choice.
You did, though. As you have said and written, if you had gone to jail for refusing the draft, it would have been less time out of your life. Less moral complication.
Yeah, happy hindsight. Any way I could trace this call? I took the cell phone out of my shirt pocket.
Put the cell down, she said. If you call anyone, I'll hang up.
The blinds were closed. You have a bug in this room?
There are other ways we can tell what you are doing. I need an answer.
Why me? I need that answered.
Expert marksman, unmarried, apolitical, and agnostic. Low-income disabled veteran against the war.
Okay. That must narrow it down to 1,000. Why me?
Because we can trust you to do the right thing. You wouldn't want Kit to come down with a rare blood disease and die slowly, would you?
What? Blood disease?
Timothy Unger. Google him. We're serious.
The line went dead. That was Timmy's name, the email ammunition boy. I looked him up and found that he was born in Iowa City 20 years ago and died last year of a heart attack. Too young. There was an autopsy, the obit said, but no follow-up story except for funeral arrangements. But then I tried rare blood disease plus Iowa City plus fatality, and his name came up. Dead last year. It was supposedly myelofibrosis, rapidly transformed into secondary acute myelogenous leukemia, leading to massive cardiac failure. The doctors were mystified by the sudden onset of the disease. Maybe there was some mysterious poison that mimicked myelofibrosis, whatever that was. Or maybe they just put a nickel in the Google machine and asked it for the name of someone local who had died of a rare disease last year. No. That wouldn't explain the emailings. Anyhow, this was way beyond the possibility of a hoax for any reason. Too complicated and expensive and incriminating. I sat down by the rifle and rubbed its smooth stock.